This is Maria Rosaris presenting New Voices, a program which interviews brand new writers from all walks of life, deep in the throes of their writing projects. I will interview them, get them to read a sample of their work, then get a total stranger to critique them. This episode is entirely about misbehaviour and rebellion and people who won't be told what to do or how to classify their work or anything else. Our writer, Julianne Wrightson, is a bit of a rebel herself who was expelled from high school in Newcastle. I can't imagine the magnitude of the crime she committed to be expelled from a Novocastrian high school. However, she had her own rebellion at hand when her body started to become intolerant of a wide range of chemicals, all of them occurring in her everyday diet. With the ardour and resistance movement demeanour of a Boadicea, or is that Boudica? Julianne fought every obstacle in her path to regain her health, and also she did not want to be condemned to a life of bland food. Her book, it's this wonderful mixture of journaling and storytelling, facts and figures, and a cookbook where she gives detailed recipes of her favourite foods, but recreated to take into consideration food intolerances. Her critiquer is a health professional with a doctorate whose initial reaction is admiration and excitement. This is something she believes can help others by making the information accessible and entertaining without taking away the seriousness of the issue. But who is this mysterious writer who calls herself K.C. Cox? A name chosen, she said, because it's a C and will sit in the middle of a bookshop shelf at eye level. You can see how she got her doctorate. And what is K.C. Cox writing in terms of literature? Crimeance. The genre that is a melding of crime and romance, with a flawed female lead character who is setting out to investigate internet dating scammers. Despite K.C. Cox's very successful and serious career in health, she's immersing herself in creative writing, which she says puts her in her very, very happy place, and her kids like her a lot more. So, rebellion and misbehaviour abounds, and I'm afraid the most grievous of all is the dreadful descent into punning. I feel like I should blame Julianne. I actually think she'd be proud of herself if I called her a bad influence. Novocastrians. Well, good morning, Julianne Wrightson. Thank you for agreeing to be on New Voices program.
Thank you for having me, Maria.
Well, I know that you've been a little bit nervous about this one. In fact, you've been nervous about the whole writing process, and you are going to be the first person we're interviewing who is actually writing not a memoir, not a creative work of fiction. Where do you place yourself when you see yourself as a writer?
It was just a whole different concept of way of writing. It has three very different elements, and the first element is that it's part story, my own personal journey with food intolerance. It transitions into part fact and then a part cookbook. So these are all the recipes and everything that I've created.
You arrived to a writer's group and you had a wad of, what was it, 5,000 words maybe?
What I actually had already physically written was a lot of medical fact, and you know, it sounded really dry and sort of, you know, like boring even to me who'd written it. And just oh my god, who's gonna want to read? Because I was thinking, how can I make this more interesting? And so then I had this desire to weave my personal journey throughout.
So what was the critical point where you went, I have to write this down, even though I don't know exactly what it's going to look like when it ends?
I talk a lot about my condition and about my food intolerances to anybody and everybody who's willing to listen.
That's in real life.
That is in real life, yes, yes, in real life.
What exactly were these conditions?
I actually have 13 food intolerances. So my intolerances are to natural food chemicals called salicylates, glutamates and amines. And food preservatives. So it seems that I have developed my food intolerances during pregnancy and after the birth of my son. So we're looking at around 22 years worth of having underlying food intolerances. But it was only in the last 7 years that it actually decided to come out of the proverbial closet, I guess you could say, when I developed a really, really nasty rash from my knees to my neck and my skin peeled off for 6 months.
And then that sort of multiplied those?
It did multiply. So I went through an elimination process with Royal Prince Alfred Hospital in Sydney. I underwent a lot of allergy testing And so then I was sent on to their dietitian. And so I underwent an elimination process.
An elimination process is that you vary your diet, excluding various things in a methodical manner.
Yes, that's correct. So I followed a very, very basic, bland, boring diet that has given me a lifelong hatred of pears because that was the only fruit that I could eat.
When you were going through this very confusing period, did you know what salicylates and glutamines were at that time?
I had absolutely no idea. And all of these long medical words and it's just completely confused me. And I was constantly Googling and constantly trying to remind myself what they were. Mm. I didn't have the opportunity to be gently guided into this. It was just like, bang, you can't eat this ever again. See you later. Work it out for yourself. So I had to try and figure out this whole new world of eating. And in doing that process, I discovered a lot about food and not just on a nutrition basis. So on a chemical basis.
There's this really lovely part of your book, which is about the sheer sensuality and pleasure that eating brings him.
I didn't want to live a flavourless life, as I call it. Who wants to be bland and boring?
Nothing that you would ever be blamed of is being bland and boring, Julianne. I know from editing parts of your book that I've had to pare back some of the less bland.
Please don't talk about pears. Flashbacks.
You decided that you were going to take your fate in your own hands, and you did it in so many incredible ways. So tell us a little bit about what kind of background you came from. Just give us a little capsule.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in Newcastle, so I'm a Novocastrian. Yay. I actually got expelled from school, so I don't have I was a very naughty, naughty girl. And I'm very, very experienced in life, I'd like to say.
Kind of.
Oh, the stories I could tell.
Okay. And that's the next book. But this book will keep clean.
Yes, you always edit it out, all the swearing that I like to put in.
Not all of them. Just enough to make it, you know, digestible.
Boom.
Did you finish your HSE?
I actually got expelled when I was in year 10. So I actually went back to TAFE to do my school certificate.
There's a kind of generosity of spirit in your writing. It's such a pragmatic approach to your life and to the issues that you were facing. And you do it with such good humour, and that comes through. And one of the things I learnt by, you know, reading your book is that increasingly there are more and more chemicals that are being introduced into the whole system of the food chain.
What I believe, we are creatures of convenience now. So we're very time poor. Manufacturers and large organisations have taken advantage of that and created a lot of the processed foods that we have. And we don't want to cook things from fresh ingredients. We just pretty much want to just chuck everything together.
You wanted to reintroduce flavour into your life.
It is getting back to the basics of cooking. That's the entire key to managing food intolerances, especially ones that are as complex as what mine are. I had to eliminate anything and everything that was processed in my pantry and my kitchen and my fridge, and I had to start all over again. So I started learning how to make my own stocks and like just those key foundation ingredients that you find in foods. I started deconstructing my favourite recipes. I started looking at ingredients in a completely different way, and even though I couldn't eat them anymore, I could imagine what they tasted like when I was trying to relearn how to cook and relearn how to blend recipes together.
It is like what a writer does. A writer evokes the experience through memory or through imagination.
It was actually instinctive. As I was going through my creative cooking, as I like to call it, I was just thinking about the elements of what I was going to put in.
Creating your own convenience foods.
That is correct. I've actually perfected a flatbread that doesn't take very long at all, and I can pre-make the dough and let the dough sit in the fridge for a few days.
And that's what is great about your book. It's looking at the time poor factor, but looking at the nutrition and maximising the whole flavour output as well. Like, it's slam dunk. So what compelled you to go, okay, I'm going to write it?
The thing that compelled me the most to write the book was so that I could share my experience with other people so that they didn't feel as if they were alone.
Which is what you felt when you were going through this.
I felt very alone and very isolated. And also, I had to learn how to do everything all over again. You know, you start your eating experiences right from birth. And I spent months and months and months just trying to find the accurate information.
Now, once you started to write it, like writing itself is confronting, as any writer will tell you.
Oh, that was very, very confronting. Food is such a personal thing. The nitty-gritty of my relationship with food and how it shaped me while I was growing up, having to sit down and write about that. One of the most confronting things that I have had to face, and I still face every time that I sit down and write, even now, but, being a larger person, that just the people, how they're going to judge me, because here I am, a larger person talking about food, you know, like that's really opening myself up to being completely, utterly mocked and trolled, put myself out there in the public without feeling like I have to justify how I look.
Because anyone who's writing a memoir exposes a lot about themselves.
Just give me just a second.
That's okay. Was the writing itself part of the process of discovering this about yourself, or was it something that you knew? I'm kind of guessing you didn't.
Well, I didn't know until I actually wrote it all down. And I think it was just that, a different way of exploring myself. I've been in the fetal position that many times over this book.
What is prevalent in your book is a sense of joy, a sense of triumph, and a sense of victory after victory over just that happens. Quite apart from the recipes and the beautiful visuals of food, just an explanation of how you have dealt with difficult circumstances and made them turn around to become something enjoyable rather than something that's, as you said, a jail sentence.
I'm not speaking as a medical person. I'm not speaking as a professional. I'm speaking from someone who has a life experience of this.
You have cross-checked any facts that you do give. You've researched very thoroughly.
I have. I've used very reliable sources. The end of the book, I have it lined up with a medical professional to make sure that the medical facts are accurate.
Great. I'm looking forward to doing the article on this and having lots of pictures of those beautiful recipes, Julianne.
And hopefully none of me in the fetal position rocking.
Now, Julianne, could you please read us a section of your book that gives us a flavour, so to speak? Oh, my God.
Well, there's a lot of puns.
But I've resorted to punning. Wipe your tears away. I just want to tell the listener that this happens a fair bit between Julianne and I. There's often a little crying moment, and I'm my usual Gemini
She's so
self.
Hard on
Are
me,
you
people.
Over this
She's
now?
So can hard we, on me.
Can we get past this? Can we get on with writing? Such compassion. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to read out this section. It's called, Is It Analogy or Am I Just Sensitive?
Let's have a taste of your work.
Food intolerances and food allergies are not one and the same. When I go out, ordering food can be quite frustrating after I mention that I have food intolerances and request an off-the-menu meal. Commonly, I am asked what I'm allergic to, and when I explain that I have a food intolerance and not allergies, the inevitable question which follows is, what's the difference? That's a good question. Most people recognise lactose and gluten intolerance, but when I mention other types such as salicylates, glutamate and amines, I receive a blank stare. Fair enough. Sometimes it's easier to say that I have an allergy rather than spending 20 minutes explaining what the difference is. However, there is a big difference, and it has to do with two of the human body's major highways, the enteric nervous system, which is known as the digestive system, and the immune system. I'll cover allergies first because I can make this one short and sweet. At one stage of confusion about my symptoms, I had thought it possible my physical reactions were due to an allergy. These weird little lumps and bumps that itched and burned and sometimes blistered would appear out of nowhere. My GP and I worked out that when I eat wheat, a few days later I'll develop an irritating itchy blister somewhere on my body. It could be anywhere, and it won't stop itching until it pops, a bit like chicken pox. Now, these little irritating blisters can be a sign of a wheat allergy. We definitely knew I didn't have chickenpox. What I now realise is that I'm lucky that those little irritating itchy blisters were not an allergy. They were one of the first signs of my impending food intolerance. An allergic reaction happens when something in your diet or environment triggers a direct response within your immune system. This means that your immune system thinks it's under attack and goes into defence mode. In response to the attack, it produces and releases large amounts of antibodies and inflammation throughout your body. These antibodies are medically referred to as IgEs. They float around your bloodstream, causing all sorts of havoc, triggering your mast cells to release a histamine response. The problem with having too much histamine hovering in your bloodstream is that your body tries to get rid of it as soon as possible. This is why you have a massive reaction, like developing hives or blisters or having trouble breathing. It's your immune system trying to release excess histamine the only way it knows how. In severe allergic cases, your body will become hypersensitive and go into anaphylactic shock, which is the last thing you want to happen. Food intolerance, on the other hand, develops when your body starts to react to certain natural or artificial chemicals in food. Salicylates, amines, and glutamate, which is MSG, and preservatives are the main type of chemicals that most people become sensitive to. Food intolerance does not directly affect your immune system like an allergy does. It affects your enteric nervous system, which causes your nerve endings to twitch and dance and grow additional branches in response to the offending food particles. Your mast cells, which are part of your immunity, release histamine and other pro-inflammatory substances and give you a response as if you're having an allergy, but it's not fatal, just really, really uncomfortable. Food intolerance won't go into terminator mode and assassinate you like an allergy could. It does scowl at you and say, "I'll be back," complete with a cold Austrian accent. But essentially, if you accidentally eat something you're intolerant to, you're not going to die. Dramatic? Possibly. But when you're experiencing your tongue swelling and your airways constricting, "I'm going to die" is the first thing that pops into your head. The mysterious thing about food intolerances is that there are so many different types of reactions and they can impersonate various health concerns. In the period before I was correctly diagnosed, I was bouncing from doctor to doctor, unable to determine what was happening to my body. I kept repeating that something was not quite right with my health. However, none of them could tell me why. My symptoms were similar to conditions like depression, anxiety, and chronic fatigue. My body hurt, my nerves were on the edge, and I felt run down. All these tests came back negative, so I was considered medically healthy. It was assumed that it was all in my head. Now, the GPs that I was seeing were quite good at their job, but at the time I felt like I was treated in a textbook manner, and my situation did not fit. I like to use the analogy of a square peg in a round hole. I am that square peg and I do not fit into round holes. I tend to break them. Food intolerance is the trickster of our modern diet. It mimics multiple health concerns, which usually results with an inaccurate diagnosis. This is what was happening to me. Continual exposure to food or food groups that are causing a reaction will result in a more aggressive response. Where food intolerance is concerned, reducing your exposure to the chemicals that are causing your reaction will allow your nerve endings to settle and return to their normal level. In some cases, your sensitivities may reduce to the point that they will not return. Unfortunately, this has not been the case in my situation, and given the wide range of intolerances I have, I'm continually inspired and compelled to spread the lessons I have learned. It always amazes me that when I talk to people about my food intolerance and writing this book, how often others can relate to my story with their own. If it's not themselves suffering, then it's a member of their family, a close friend or colleague. Too many people are suffering, mostly in silence and confusion. For a long time, medical practitioners didn't believe that food intolerances existed unless you were obviously lactose intolerant or celiac. This was because there was no medical evidence to suggest that they were real. It wasn't until the 1960s that sensitivities to natural food chemicals became known and the medical world shifted their focus towards IBS and food sensitivities as a medical condition and not a psychiatric one, the all-in-your-head mentality. Tolerances and sensitivities are on the rise, and more people are turning to the health and wellness industry for answers. I was really fortunate. My GP was open to suggestions from my naturopath and vice versa, which enabled me to have personal input and greater control over my treatment and recovery.
And that was Julianne Wrightson. On to the critique part of our program with the wonderful Casey Cox. What did you think, Casey?
Oh, incredible. What a brave woman.
I saw you avidly writing notes all the way and smiling and grinning and nodding.
A real story here of her own suffering journey, and in the most generous way of wanting people to learn in a very easy way to understand it. We're talking about also the vulnerability that she felt so strongly about her own body image. But honestly, this is captivating me.
Because I was having trouble thinking, how do I categorize this book? Because it is part cookbook, it is part personal story, and is part of a writer's journey.
In a way, I think that we're starting to find genres merging together.
Yes.
It is partly medical. It's also fact-checked, so there's medical reliability in the information. But the wonderful thing is about the experience of food. I don't know what the genre would be, but I think it's very exciting.
I'm beginning to think, who cares?
I think we're ahead of the game. Yes. With that sort of thinking.
The reader is ahead of the game in this. Sheer popularity of things like personal memoir, creative memoir, to hear the choices and decisions that other people make so that they can learn from them in their own lifetime.
I think Julianne said something for me that was just so much of a standout, and that was about being alone and isolated.
Yes.
She wants other people to learn from what she did. That comes through in bucket loads. It's putting into context that feeling that people think you've got a psychiatric illness.
Yes.
You know? But look, I'm an old midwife, and PMT, people thought you were going a bit mad. But you know, when she said that she was in the fetal position so many times in writing this, I could instantly imagine that. Mm. Not only with just what she's revealing about herself, perhaps in the writing process, what she's discovering,
but also the obstinacy, and who's, okay, I don't understand what's happening, but I'm going to find out. I just think that's, wow, that's somebody you want to read, right?
Oh, absolutely. I loved the way in which she's really thought through themes within the way she's writing. Like, that's actually what made it very easy for me to understand exactly what she's talking about. And that whole section about allergies versus food intolerances, and backing it up with real examples of going out for dinner. But she was very clever at weaving in some of the medical and, you know, more education about our bodies, the difference between the digestive system and the immune system.
Yeah.
The way she's described this and her storytelling around it is highly memorable. Felt like it was like a spy movie, you know, Terminator mode, you know, Austrian accent. Like, how vivid is that? Honestly, she's a gem. Oh, my goodness, she is really such a great writer.
She's a good storyteller. And she's got such a big personality, and she's got the rare ability to be able to translate that personality into her writing, which, as you know, is no mean feat.
She took the plunge, and I think her definite passion here is to not be alone and to stop other people from being alone in the journey. That is her, I believe, her single most important driver, breaking through that terrible vulnerability, that terrible self-doubt that writers have, in not indulging herself in those negative thoughts. Her courage to go through all of these intolerances shows in her courage to break through with her writing process.
When she reached that point that I think all writers do, suddenly you feel very exposed.
I hope Julianne feels really proud once she gets to the end, gets this published, and that she then is on this massive speaking circuit.
Yeah.
There will be so many calls for her to be able to share her story so that others can also share theirs. She is really contributing to the well-being of so many other people's lives.
And she's doing what I recommend every writer does these days, given the publishing environment. She's building up a fan base, you know, through a blog and through a website. She, just before COVID, was attending conferences. She could practice her speaking ability and being able to talk about her book in a pithy manner. But before we progress, we've started spilling our enthusiastic reaction to Julianne's work. We've met in a writer's group, but I didn't realise you have a medical background as well. Who the hell are you?
Yes. I feel like I have a double life. I started my life as a nurse, and then I was a midwife. For the last 25 years, I've lived in Newcastle. I got a PhD in behavioural sciences in medicine. I ran an organisation called the Arts Health Institute. Now I've been working a lot in aged care as a specialist consultant.
Yes. So, Casey, why, given this amazing career you have, is it crime writing?
Crimeance, blending crime and romance.
Crimeance, I love it.
I've developed a character that I just absolutely love, involved in an internet dating scam. But
it's hard and it's lonely.
My very, very happy place is that solitary moment of my creative process. And if I don't write, I don't feel quite right.
Oh, puns. Yeah, as we've created a terrible neural pathway there.
But do you know what writing does? It makes you conscious. Interestingly, my children have said I'm much nicer. So when we think about Julianne's, the fact that she has recipes in there is fabulous. It's got this other story, but I also love the fact that she's being very careful too about the fact-checking.
Yes.
Around the medical side. It shows that she's being really careful about, you know, which people interpret what it is her experience has been, and making sure that the terminology is right and so on. Yeah. I think that that's really invaluable. We have to be, even with fiction, you know, like it's so important that we have that credibility.
Absolutely.
A wonderful, innovative way of writing.
If you look at current times, you know, people are spending a lot more time at home, and it's also a time when people see food as a rich component of their sensual, physical and cultural expression.
I love anything that's very sensual, and food. Food is the soul of, you know, existence. Oh. Like without food, we die.
Yeah.
Food gives you a life force.
Yeah.
Food is an experience that's not just a dry medical thing, which is kind of how the deconstruction happened, where she had to do all that pairing. And she said they just told her, you can't have this anymore.
Yeah.
Like when you take away something that's a gives you life, gives you joy, gives you pleasure.
Yes. And she had to also deconstruct her own experience and habits.
Like we can actually re-engineer our brain. Food is very strongly associated with all the senses, and particularly memory. Food memory is really important, and that's what you're talking about here, because food happens every day. The isolation that you can feel when you can't eat whatever else is on the table, that whole social construct around food where you have to reject food. I'm sure the book will be an incredible read,
and
I want to get a copy.
Thank you so much, Casey. I can't wait to interview you as a writer a little bit more fully.
A pleasure, a real honour to be on your show, Maria. I'm delighted, and I love the series. It's great.
Yeah. This is Maria Rosaris, and it was a pleasure to bring you this program, produced in the Sydney studios of 2RPH with the support and inspiration of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. I look forward to your company next time. Oh, and just before I leave, I'd like to invite you to donate to 2RPH, where this program is produced. Our donation campaign is underway, and you can contribute by calling 02-9518-8811, calling business hours, or visit 2rph.org.au/donate. Thank you.